For February the 21st, 2020, we talk about Void Bastards, more Jedi Fallen Order, and we ask you about your favorite pets in games. Welcome to Level 317. My name is Cole Ross.
My name's David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Ben, you teased us with something you almost said in the green room, and then you moved it into the actual show. So
I almost made pre-show banter, which would be a cardinal sin.
Right.
So,
yeah. We got to use it. If it's in the show, in the show.
Yeah, I was having a talk with coworkers today. We were talking about politics, which normally is not great, but we were talking about different political systems, which I always think is fun because we would have the same discussion in college, like in the math department. So I thought of a new idea for government, which might be interesting.
Okay.
So what if after a president serves their term, they are executed as soon as they leave office?
So I want to make clear, because my address is on everything. You're not saying this should happen. You are saying this is a conversation, hypothetical, about how that would affect who would run for president.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So all we're saying is we know where the president lives.
what you are calling for is a Cincinnatus enforced with extreme prejudice.
Yes, this would be a voluntary thing. Everyone would opt in. It's not like a rise up situation.
Yeah.
But the idea is to make it more of a voluntary position that many people are not incentivized to want to do.
Yeah.
Like, to try and weed out people and make it a very altruistic task of leading the country for 4 to 8 years.
So do you worry that somebody who takes that position would have nothing to lose, and so they would and so they would act more drastically, let's say?
Well, so there'd still be a voting system, so people would still need to vote for this person.
Okay.
So it could be, it could be a crazy person who's going balls out, but they still need to get support of the country.
I mean, we've not proven that we are good at spotting that.
That's true.
Right.
To be fair, though, could this have a perverse incentive? Like, I feel like this system would make me more likely to vote Trump.
hypothetically, of course. It feels a little bit like an opposite. Have you heard this is a thing that comes up sometimes when you're talking about like nuclear weapons or arms control or anti-proliferation, where instead of having the launch codes, you know, in the football, right, which is the briefcase that the person carries around, the launch codes would be in a capsule embedded in like an aide's chest.
Yeah.
So in order for the president to launch the nukes, they would have to kill their aide with a knife, dig out the capsule.
I like that. That's the stipulation.
Jigsaw
style. It's not surgical at all.
Right. Like, you
have
like,
to get it there.
You have to kill.
Well,
you don't
have much time.
Right. And you know, basically, to kill many people, you have to make it as immediate for the person launching the nukes as possible. And have them kill somebody with their bare hands in order to be able to do it. And like, the argument is, well, they might not want to launch the nukes then if they're afraid to kill somebody, which I think is a rebuttal that is also the argument against itself.
Yeah.
See, I like the variant of that strategy where the nukes are, you know, the nuke codes are implanted within Randy Couture.
Who is Randy Couture?
Mixed martial arts champion.
Okay.
Punch the nukes, you have to kill him.
You also have to have to subdue the mixed martial arts champion. Yeah.
That sounds like a very peaceful solution.
Yep.
So I'm okay with that.
No more nukes ever. Yeah. So related to this, if you are interested in politics, so this weekend we're doing like a little thing. It's like last minute, like literally I just put up the page today, weekend for Bernice. On Saturday, I'm going to be doing some streaming. On Sunday, Gary's going to be doing some streaming. We're going to be raising money for Bernie Sanders through Act Blue at twitch.tv/duckfeedtv.
That is cool. Such a dumb name. I love it.
Gary was like, hey man, can you name this, because like I've been racking my brain trying to think of puns for ducks and Bernie. I said weekend for Bernie's. If you were like, for Bernie's what? For Bernie's campaign.
Nice.
Yeah. So details are at duckfeed.tv/Bernie. I'll be streaming some Frostpunk in the afternoon in addition to regular Hex Crank stuff in the evening.
What are the times you're streaming again?
No idea just yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
So. As a side note, I've been watching some Let's Plays of Frostpunk.
Mm-hmm.
I did not realize the degree to which, like, the more expansions they release for that game, the more political it gets.
I mean, it's pretty, I mean, like, very quick toward the start. Like, when you do the scenario with the failed colony, the reason that colony failed is because of a labor uprising. And you...
I didn't realize that was in the base campaign.
I don't know if it was in the base campaign or if it was, like, one of the first pieces of DLC, like, free DLC that they put out. But yeah, like, The Last Autumn is also about labor stuff.
Pretty much every decision you make in that game is a political decision, though, and a good one as well.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's pretty ambiguous because the early steps do not necessarily imply the later steps. Like, mm-hmm. you know, putting out a Night Watch immediately leads to, like, the New Order fascism.
You didn't see that coming?
all I wanted was for people not to steal our supplies.
Yeah, the one,
and that's what's
the one
happening.
That, the one that struck me as a little, like, wow, that's not necessarily what someone would have intended, mm-hmm. is that legalizing prostitution innately entails forcing women into prostitution.
Yeah.
Which, granted, like, that is kind of the argument, but, I mean, still, there's, like, a small difference between, like, we're going to make the law be, like, hey, we're hands off, and, like,
right. And then and then immediately you are economically coerced because there is a need. Yeah. It's a real harrowing game. Like, I love that game a lot. Just the more I think about it, it is one of my favorite games of, like, the past 5 years. It's so good.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to be talking about games
really?
Here.
Go ahead. Yeah. we're not living in the past. We'll save that for, I don't know, abject. No, not abject suffering.
Nope.
For WoF. Yeah,
for one of those. Yeah. David, what you up to?
Not a whole lot. I celebrated Valentine's Day in the most appropriate way there is, you know, hitting people with sticks.
Cool.
you know, as you do.
Uh-huh. Did you hit people with sticks real good?
Solid follow-up question.
So, actually, I've been struggling because we're doing it in this kind of, like, underpass area in Central Park.
Hey, David.
Yeah?
Are you training to be part of the Foot Clan?
I mean, it tends to be more the Warriors than that.
Okay, all right. I mostly just asked that question for comedic value. I was not actually making fun of the way you pass your time.
No, I mean,
the way you described it under an overpass in Central Park sounded very Shredder to me.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, it's very much just straight up, like, you know, this was, you know, place we could find that's big enough that, like, you know, no one cares. And, you know, has cover so that, you know, if it snows, rains, whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, all of the, like, team pictures and like, you know, we video the sparring matches so that you can, you know, analyze how you did, you know, kind of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Or end up looking like something from like, yeah, like an 80s, you know, some sort of movie.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. We also at one of them had a guy that was almost certainly a like a ex-con kind of scoping the group. Kind of, I don't know. I don't quite understand the logic of like if you're scoping out who's going to be your mark, the people like swinging sticks, probably you could have like just skipped that one.
I mean, but, maybe they're looking to intimidate the group. They are watching for the dominant stick fighter so that they can take them out and then co-opt you for their own designs.
Yeah, that could be, yeah. You know, I mean,
videotaping stick fighting under a bridge, like, all of this sounds strange, but then not strange for New York. If I saw this, it would just be like, yeah, that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. It is funny seeing sometimes, like, people's reactions, because, like, I don't think we've had anyone just, like, I know, like, react poorly. We've had a couple people, you know, a little bit, like, oh, not, you know, not make eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll fairly often just have people, like, stroll through walking their dogs just like, is there a thing?
They have lives to live. They know you have a life to live.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, this guy, like, proceeds to, you know, come in and, like, you know, proceeds to shout his name at the top of his lungs, you know, Lazarus! Like, it's, I don't know, maybe we just accidentally walked onto the set of the Warriors remake.
Yeah, maybe. Wow.
So yeah, that's basically been just my, where I was going with that is just, the light is really bad, and for some reason, I have always really struggled with like that, where it's inconsistent lighting conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, really messes with your depth perception.
Mm.
So yeah.
How about you, Ben? What you been up to?
Just eating a salad.
Oh, that's fine. No, didn't mean to catch you while you were muted.
What type of salad?
Waldorf salad. Pretty tasty.
Okay.
In fact, cool. That actually leads into what I've been doing. I started eating salads for lunch this past week.
Cool.
Inspired by Joaquin Phoenix's speech, I tried to not eat meat this last week.
How'd that work out for you?
It's going fine. You know, you can switch out. There's enough tofu options, so that's good.
Yeah.
But we'll see how long that lasts for.
Yeah, I I've been tempted in the past by like meatless Mondays or what have you, things like that. More so just for like, you know, what am I looking at? Variety, for like dietary variety reasons more than anything, because mm-hmm. I tend to fall into ruts. But mm-hmm. yeah, well that's cool.
Even for me, even for me personally, I don't mind eating fish or chicken. Like mm-hmm. I feel little to no guilt about that.
Yeah,
and I. Yeah, and I mean, my understanding is from, at least from, like, a sustainability issue, it's, you know, cutting out red meat is by far, like, the biggest bang for your buck.
Oh, yeah, like, red meat's going to be phased out in our lifetimes, probably. Yeah. Or we're going to get Blade Runner new sush kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I don't know... I would love to see. I don't know if there's any options for like not factory farmed chicken. Like, it seems like mm-hmm. a lot of the things I hear say like even free range tends to be kind of creepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know enough. I don't know enough to make a call on that.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Like, does work make it easy for you to make that kind of decision?
Yeah, it's the coolest thing. So there's a app you can get to order a salad. You just order it in the morning. And you can pick it up. Like, you can set a time to pick it up, and you just pay it through the app. So it's easy. Like, you don't have to talk with people. You don't have to deal with money. It's great.
Is that a like a work cafeteria thing, or like a company in the air?
It's at a work cafeteria, but the app is through someone else. I think I think it's called Urban Spoon. I think that's a thing, right?
I've heard of that.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's definitely a thing.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very cool.
Rogue Spoon. Rogue Spoon, excuse
me. Okay, yes. I have not heard of
that's
that.
That's the more edgy version.
Yeah.
It sneaks up on you with some salad.
Mm-hmm.
You just...
It's super effective when you eat it as well.
Yes. Yeah. you get real confused for a second, and then you just wonder why you're holding a packet of salad dressing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't have too much going on. I was sick this past weekend to a certain degree, which sucked. And then I also, like, while still half sick, had to, for work, go see the Sonic the Hedgehog movie.
Wait, how did you have to do this for work?
For Adaptation Decay, the show we do on Patreon about video game movies and TV shows and stuff.
Right. Well, you kind of signed up for that, I guess.
Yeah, it's
reviews have been pretty good.
I wish it was more of a train wreck than it was, and I don't want to spoil too much of that episode. I watched it and I was like, man, if I was 10 years old, I would be losing my shit. But like, it was a very uncomfortable like movie going experience for me. See the aforementioned episodes where I talk about preferring to go to movie theaters like first thing during the day on a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. In order to be in an empty showing room, I was like, this place, it was completely packed with kids and their parents and stuff. So, mm-hmm. And I'm sitting in the back and I'm like furiously typing notes on my phone. And I'm worried that just like I'll hear sirens like whoop. Will the lone 32-year-old man in the back of this theater please report to jail?
And then, I mean, you have to carry all your notes and stuff, so you've got to wear the trench coat. And
I was doing it on my phone, thank you. Yeah, so, but that was interesting. That's really all that's happening here. I don't know, I'm kind of champing at the bit to get into the show.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, the regular kind of show with, you know, the grind, the multiplayer, and rounding it out with the end boss. And why don't we get started with...
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past period of time or so. David, you've been away the longest. I will throw to you first.
Sure. So I've really been enjoying Xbox... Is it Xbox Live Arcade or what? I guess Game Pass, Xbox thing for PC.
Yeah.
Which would have been such a better name for it.
You initially hopped on this for a trial for Ghost Recon, right?
Right, exactly. Exactly. And just have kind of been continuing on. Or actually, that might have been I don't know. Same idea. So I picked up Void Bastards.
I've heard of this.
It's like a Borderlands like, right?
Yeah, so it's a roguelike, you know, kind of Borderlands-esque, in particular, has a very similar aesthetic to Borderlands.
Yeah.
The setting, though, is very similar to Outer Worlds, except if instead of emphasizing like the psychopath capitalism stuff, if you just to an equal degree as that game emphasized bureaucracy, that's basically the game. So all of your successive characters that you take the role of are basically dehydrated and then subsequently rehydrated prisoners upon this massive prison transport ship that got lost in the Sargasso Nebula.
Okay.
And you're revived by the ship's AI, and there's nothing actually stopping the ship from just going where it's supposed to. The faster than light travel works perfectly fine, but you then spend the entirety of the rest of the game having to get a new citizen ID card so that you can authorize it to use the faster than light travel to, you know, take you to where it's supposed to go.
Okay.
And so, you know, you're basically adventuring around and, like, having to get, like, staplers and, you know, rubber stamps and things like that so that you can basically appease the bureaucracy and make it through the system.
Right.
The enemies, kind of the plot line is that the Sargasso Nebula, you know, a whole bunch of ships get lost in there, and there's some sort of weird space rays that cause people to get mutated. So you're fighting all the, like, mutated crews and stuff of these ships.
Okay.
And a lot of them are very explicitly, like, members of the bureaucracy. So you have, you know, Zex, which are these, you know, women in, like, you know, executive suits that, you know, have a force field and follow you around, you know, trying to shoot lasers at you. You have scribes, which are basically the, you know, kind of middle management bureaucrats that, you know, are their background chatter is, you know, them complaining about you being late for your 5 o'clock and, you know, them gossiping about, you know, coworkers and things like that. So it's very, oh, very kind of atmospheric.
Yeah.
The actual graphics are leaning very heavily into the cel shaded.
Yeah.
It's probably the most effective game I've ever seen in terms of the making it look like a comic book. To the point where the way they do stealth is actually when you are within within range of an enemy but don't actually have line of sight, you'll get kind of comic book style, like, sound effects of their footsteps.
Oh, that's great.
Or similarly, like, if you say, like, you know, need to, like, pop around a corner, you know, throw a grenade and pop out, you know, you wait till it goes off and you see a big, you know, boom pop up. So it's very, very well done. Also, the gameplay is very, I would almost say the game feels more like a combination puzzle game and kind of management type of thing.
Okay.
In that the shooting is not difficult at all, but your weapons are, you know, almost all, you know, much more unusual than just for a normal first-person shooter. So you have, like, for example, guns that do very slow damage, but it's over time. So, and don't alert enemies when you hit them. You have, there's certain groups of enemies that kind of this swarm of, like, 10 enemies. So explosives are much more effective to them. There's a weapon that basically allows you to temporarily put a character in stasis and then, like, re-release them somewhere else so you can try to, like, release them behind a locked door, things like that.
Okay.
And so the game becomes much more about learning these characters, learning the strategies, and then figuring out kind of ways, you know, ways you're going to interact with them. Likewise, there's a whole bunch of environmental obstacles. So, like, things like open garbage cans that have, like, shrooms growing in them that will cause you to start hallucinating.
As you do?
Yeah, yeah, as you do. So it just the whole game becomes all about this this system. And by the end of it, you get to the point where, you know, you can pretty much just, like, sprint through the system, and it's just a thing where it's kind of, you know, as long as you're constantly shifting between, you know, engaging these different mechanics and systems, mm-hmm. you're fairly safe.
Yeah.
So overall, really good. The one downside I would say to it is the ending is kind of crap. It's very thematically appropriate, but just not particularly satisfying.
How do you get to an ending? Is it just, like, do you accumulate like progress over the course of several runs, or is it just if you successfully complete a run, it gives you a conclusion to that run that is like in the story of the game?
Sure. So it's what it basically is you, as you're playing, you're finding either finding parts or finding sort of raw materials that get recycled into one of the basic resources that you can use to craft parts. Mm-hmm. And that allows you to basically craft and upgrade the various guns and items you use. So that's the actual kind of gameplay progression. And then the story progression is likewise, you have to you have to craft this series of items. So like initially it's your the actual ID card itself, and then eventually it's like a cooling system for the HR computer so that it can process your ID.
Yeah.
And so basically once you get all these items, that's the end of the game.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Two more questions just based on kind of half paying attention to this game when it came out. Mm-hmm. Is this like at all class based, or is it just each run you get what you get in terms of the loadout?
Sure. So your character has up to three quirks, which are sometimes negative things, sometimes positive things. You know, they range from, for example, if your character is a smoker, they'll periodically cough, alerting every enemy in the area.
Oh, cool.
If your character is, say, let's see, you can get, I think my final run was a character with sticky feet, which made it so that if I step on oil, I don't then slide around for several seconds.
Cool.
I had, I think, Recycler, which just gives you more loot, and then Sixth Sense, which let me see enemies on my mini-map. However, there's a lot of much weirder ones. There's ones where one is where you're basically very short, and so you're, in effect, you're always crouched.
Okay.
Which one of the big benefits of that is that normally when you're crouched, you can't sprint. So you can basically like go through vents or go behind cover at full speed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, similarly, there's things like one of the main enemy classes in the game are called tourists, who are basically these kind of blob creatures that proceed to just be obnoxious tourists. So, you know, either complain about the service or like obnoxiously, you know, try to get you to help them.
Do they blind you by taking pictures, or
do they ask you where McDonald's is?
Yeah, it's basically stuff like that.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Sounds like Toe Jam and Earl.
The thing is, when you get close to them, they explode. However,
as tourists do.
However, one of the perks you can get is called Tour Guide, which is basically then they just don't explode.
And so these perks, are they like randomized at the start of each run? Because this sounds like Rogue Legacy, almost.
Yeah, so they are randomized. However, one of the other kind of gameplay items is each ship you're going to is a certain class of ship, which gives you an idea of, you know, overall what the layout will be, what sort of characteristics, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And one of the ships is basically a therapy ship, a gene therapy ship.
Okay.
And so in that, one of the items you can find basically lets you choose to switch out one of your perk slots for another one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you do have a certain degree of control.
Gotcha. My other question about this, and it's been answered by most of this, but I want it to be clear. This is a single player game, right?
Yeah, okay. Single player.
Gotcha. Yeah, it looks, you know, because of the Borderland look, it made me think that maybe it was a cooperative thing like that.
Yeah, it definitely has that look, but very, very different gameplay. It's actually, I don't know, did you ever play Card Hunter?
No.
Okay, game I highly recommend, kind of turn-based tactics game, but made by this same company.
Gotcha.
Cool. How much is this game worth, David? What's a good price point for it?
I would say it's worth a Game Pass membership.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I forgot the initiating part of this conversation.
Yeah.
It's 30 on Steam right now, and it's on my wish list, but...
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I would say it's a game I liked a lot. Like, I really had a great time with it. It's about, I think they say, like 15 to 20 hours. The one downside, I would say, is, like I said, the ending is kind of mediocre.
Yeah.
So it's a thing where the gameplay, you know, as long as you're cool with it, like being about the gameplay and like the world in general, I'd say it's worth it. If you know, if not, maybe wait for on sale or try Game Pass.
Yeah.
Okay.
That sounds like a good argument for getting Game Pass.
Yeah. I've been really, really happy with it so far.
Nice. Void Bastards.
Cole, I think you can say any game name and it'll make it sound attractive.
Like, oh yes, adding the gravitas. Get Void Bastards today. Go to Steam Early Access to buy Dingleberry Hop. just saying nonsense at this point. Cool. Have you played anything else, David?
So after I beat that, I downloaded Sunset Overdrive.
Oh, cool. Okay.
I've just played, like, I don't know, like an hour of it, basically like the tutorial of it.
Okay.
So so far it's interesting. I don't know. Did either of you play it at all?
No.
I have not. Yes.
It was an Xbox One launch title, and it remained exclusive for so long that I forgot about it, and then it came to PC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's at least so far, it's kind of an interesting game. You know, very strong aesthetics, you know, kind of the over-the-top, you know, punk aesthetics. And I'm going to say it seems like a game that, my understanding is it was a pretty high-profile, you know, commercial failure.
It wasn't helped by being exclusive.
Right. And well, and I think the other thing is just, I don't think the marketing did a good job of you know, showing what the game is in that. I know, you know, it's, you know, like I said, it's, you know, kind of got the punk aesthetic, kind of the pseudo edgy thing, but the marketing, at least to me, made it come across as very, I don't know, edgelordy.
Okay.
You know, just kind of, you know, I don't know, just immature, like, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And the game itself seems much more kind of self-aware and kind of, you know, having fun with the concept than what the what it seems like most of the trailers and stuff like that implied.
Yeah.
Maybe it sounds similar to like Saints Row, where like the veneer of it was different than the gameplay. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And I think kind of has, has some definite elements of that. I think the biggest thing I'm going to see is it, you know, trades very heavily on its traversal mechanic. You know,
it's all about like zipping around, right?
Yeah, big focus on grinding and big focus on it has very, very over the top mantling mechanics. So like you can probably mantle like, I don't know, like a 1.5 to 2 story tall building.
Okay.
And
what does mantling mean?
Basically to like climb over a wall.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, you do it by sort of like grabbing on and kind of doing a front flip. So you kind of propel yourself like several feet above it. So the end result is, you know, it's kind of got some, you know, I'm doing air quotes, parkour mechanics, but in a very, very floaty, over the top manner.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing that's going to determine whether it's ultimately a successful game, at least, you know, for me playing it, is the degree to which like that actually ends up working long term.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know about other people, but I know I became retroactively interested in this game after Spider-Man came out.
Yeah.
What is the relation with Spider-Man? I'm not
same developers.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Same developer. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, in that makes sense in that, you know, at the very least, there is a very Spider-Man-esque way, you know, sense of movement to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When they did interviews for Spider-Man, they talked about how this game helped them solve like movement problems that they would face in Spider-Man. So
yeah,
yeah.
So we all owe Sunset Overdrive a debt.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it sounded like I was being sarcastic, but I wasn't.
No. So that's all I have at this point. I'll probably be talking about it more next week.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
All right, I got a few things. I'll talk briefly about Slay the Spire, because I can't remember if I mentioned this or not. There's a new character in Slay the Spire, the Watcher. Hmm. Did I talk about this? It's a blind character. I don't know. Their main mechanic is they switch between, like, modes. They have, like, states that they operate in. So there's one called Calm, there's one called Fury, and there's one called, I think, Divination or something like that. And each state, they do a different degrees of, like, multipliers for their damage. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like a risk-reward where, like, the Fury state, they do double damage, but then they receive double damage. So you have to be very careful about when you do it, because if you get in that state and don't get out of it, then you can get hosed by the enemy.
Right.
So I've played like that a handful of times over the past couple of weeks, ever since I realized there was a fourth class available. I've gotten to the final boss a couple of times, but I've not beaten it, so I've been saddened by that. One of the times, like, I had like the best possible deck archetype of one of the archetypes you can have. I did not know how I could improve it, and I still died. Yeah. I haven't been able to find like a high defensive build with any of the strategies.
Okay.
And so go ahead.
Sorry, is that across the game, or do you mean specifically with this character?
Specifically for this class, because other classes you can do high defense pretty easily, I think. Maybe the robot's the one exception, but I don't know. Anyway, that game still is great, by the way. Like, that game is just a really well-balanced game. Like, I don't know how they tweaked all the enemies as well as they did, because the decks that you can build have such a high variance, and the fact that all the enemies you face are, like, well-balanced. There's no runs that I have... Take that back. There's, like, maybe one run that I've had where I, like, completely hosed through and never got any damage taken, like, in a single map, you know? But outside of that, like, it's always a struggle no matter which direction your deck takes. So I think that's cool. Yeah. I don't know. I don't have too much to talk about that, though. That's just the new characters available in case anybody listening wasn't aware of that, because I was not aware of that.
I wasn't aware that they were continuing to expand that game.
Yeah, and that's the other point, too, is I'm not sure. I think the character might still be in beta. I'm not sure if it's, like, fully released or not.
Oh, so it might not be on the console builds?
I honestly don't know, because it was just there when I opened the game one time and I was like, oh, and fourth character, whatever. Yeah, so I don't know. Whatever. Sweet. I'm glad that they're still developing for it, though.
Yeah.
Maybe piggybacking on top of that, I did watch a video of the developers. This is the same sort of video that I referenced like a while ago on a podcast where I watched developers of the game watch somebody speedrun the game and beat it in like 12 minutes time or whatever.
Yeah, with Outer Worlds.
Yeah. I saw somebody do that with Slay the Spire as well. It's very enjoyable watching those types of videos, I think, because watching and there's one of getting over it as well. And the developer there did a very good summary of it where he's like, you know, you polish these games, you do a bunch of playtesting, and you make sure it's operating exactly as you planned. Then you release it, and then speedrunners completely break everything that you tried to build up.
So I'm kind of surprised with Slay the Spire that that would be successful, or that that would be as compelling, just because, you know, it's sort of innately a game where the developer has, you know, pseudo complete control.
It's not maybe the most entertaining run through. It was a person doing the Ironclad, which is like the red character. They had like two cards where it's like one was deal damage to every enemy. I forget the other one was some way to increase that, like give everyone vulnerable or something like that. It was like a very simple idea. They rested like at every campsite that they went to, but it was just like nutsly fast. Like they were playing cards before, like you can play cards before the entire deck is dealt out to your hand. So they were doing that. Cool. Which is, it's cool that you can do that, like the game allows that or whatever, but yeah, anyway, whatever. I don't want to talk about that.
Is there any advantage to doing that?
If you're speedrunning, then it's quicker. That's the only one I can think of.
I would like to see more games do like the, what is it, RPG Earthbound, where, you know, when you get attacked, your health ticks down, so you can get killed, but as long as you beat the enemy before your health finishes ticking down, you're fine.
It's a good system. And they really they did a cool complication on that with Mother 3. Yeah, I have nothing else to add about that. Yeah, continue.
Slay the Spire continues to be a good game. New games that I started playing this week, though. I have two. One is okay, and the other one's pretty good. The okay one, I started playing Luigi's Mansion.
Oh, Luigi's Mansion 3?
Yeah, for the Switch. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's a puzzle game. I was kind of going into it with the same expectations of like Super Mario or Odyssey, where it's like, okay, well-designed puzzles, good, like clean mechanics, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't have gone in with those expectations because it's not nearly as good as Mario Odyssey.
Right.
It's an okay game. I haven't played a Luigi's Mansion game before, so this is my first entry in that, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So for those who aren't familiar with it, or those who haven't played this one at least, you start the game more or less with a vacuum cleaner that can either suck things in or blow things out. That's the initial like tool you have, and you kind of get doled out more mechanics as you go through floor by floor. The premise of it is you're going through this haunted hotel. There's, I forget how many floors, maybe like 24 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Every like maybe two or three, you'll either face a boss battle, you're get a new mechanic, and then the floor will kind of have puzzles that are, that only can be solved by the new mechanic that you have.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bad. It's just that I think the game is designed more for kids, I think. And that's not really a knock against the game. I think, mm-hmm. like, the main sticking point is I'm not like, the target audience member of the game.
You have to, like, really be into, like, the presentation and, like, messing with the gimmicks. Is kind of the level that I enjoyed it on.
Yeah, and that's, I think, one of the... Yeah, so one of the things they do is... A lot of the things you can interact with, I'm trying to think of how, like, for example, there's like a pool table and you can use your vacuum to blow the balls around the pool table and you can blow them into pockets and then reach in and grab them if you want to. You can suck about anything into your vacuum as long as it's not a huge object. But even the huge objects you can move around typically.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting mechanic that they introduce, maybe like later than I expected to, because it was maybe a couple hours into it, is you can create a doppelganger cutely called Gooigi, mm-hmm. which is a green goo shaped Luigi zombie. It raises a lot of weird questions, yeah. Like having this character.
And the fact that you soul jump between them.
That's the weird part. It's like Luigi's soul leaves and he kind of droops down lifeless, and then you like run around as an animated goo.
Mario, there is no afterlife.
I'm gonna live with the new flesh.
All right, so this brings up another point too, is they say words in this game, which I am not really a fan of. even like Mario says, "Oh, doggy." And it's "No, you shouldn't do that." I think that was a good rule you had in place before.
Stick to let's a go.
Yeah. So that was kind of off-putting at first. I guess it's fine now. It's not a huge sticking point, but anyway, whatever. The interesting thing about the doppelganger, though, is they have a cool thing where if you're doing any sort of action, like sucking the vacuum in or blowing the air out or whatever, and you switch while you're doing that action, they will stay in that action.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea is you can try and do like multiple things at once.
Yeah, it's messing with the toggle. Yeah.
Yeah. So like you, it kind of like creates a much larger space of like interactions that you can have, I guess. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's all interesting. So that's interesting. I spent like a day playing it. And then I was on call this weekend. I took it over for my friend. So I knew I was going to spend all weekend at home. So I had gotten two different games to play over the weekend. Oh, yeah. So I devoted my first day to this one and then switched off of it. The second game I've been playing, has been Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. Ooh. Colons all over the place. This is kind of upon your recommendation, Cole. I think this game is great. I've had a great time with it. I've only played it for a day, but that's the game I'm going to go play after we're done recording. So we've talked about this the past 2 weeks because Cole's been playing it.
Yes.
I'll just kind of try and lump on things. The world is beautiful in this game. Like the art, the attention, like the, what is it? What's the right word? The art and the design of this game is really, really good. It is a Metroid game, as you've mentioned in previous podcasts. The map is really good, as you've mentioned in previous podcasts. Mm-hmm. But I was just amazed with the scenery, the characters, even though they're very, like stereotypical, or you know, very archetypical. Is that a good way to describe it? Yeah,
there's like the crotchety pilot and the, you know, the ragtag upstart.
Like all that's been done before, but this is done well, and it's like not annoying or anything. It's it doesn't get in the way or anything. They do just enough, so it's good. I'm fine with that. No problem. And it's just a weird clash of having like an Uncharted presentation with having gameplay of Dark Souls. So it's kind of I'm fine with it. Like it's not as Dark Souls as I thought it was gonna be.
It's so much faster and looser is the thing.
Yeah, and they definitely do have enemies that are like you can tell are Dark Souls types enemies. You know, they're 4 to 5 times your size. They have a move set that's very obvious and very telegraphed.
They're placed in such a way as to screw you over. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and they do a decent job of this too. I was very thankful because one of the first times you run into one of the bigger ones, your character says, run, or something like that, effect, where it's like, okay, I don't need to face this person yet. I'm just going to run through that. And it's nice that they give you that option. That said, there is like a frog type monster in the first planet. That I have died to so many times.
To be fair, frogs have always been evil in Dark Souls.
you don't have the power that you need to deal with them yet.
Yeah, but this is one gameplay thing I really, really like is the fact that you don't really lose your experience. You just bank it and whatever kills you.
And so
as long as you go back and kill whatever it is, I think it's even if you die like 4 or 5 times in between killing that, I'm pretty sure, but I haven't tested that.
I'm not sure. I've always made a beeline for it.
But you get that experience back. Mm-hmm. And so that I think is a really good improvement over Dark Souls. Cause I always feel this sense of like loss and anxiety. If I don't get the experience that I lost the last run or whatever back, then I feel like completely failed.
You haven't lost enough. You need to lose like so much at one time that it breaks you.
I don't. That's not a positive experience. I don't want to do that.
Give in.
I just like the what was the shooter Dark Souls that just institutionalized that?
Immortal Unchained. We're just trolled you if you lost more than 30,000. Yeah.
Yep.
Continue, Ben. I apologize.
No, you're good. But yeah, the game's pretty satisfying otherwise. There's a lot of shortcuts type thing where the more edges you explore, the more that like loops back to itself. And usually by the end of exploring a map, you kind of find a beeline to each place through the shortcuts that you find.
Yeah, that is like a quintessentially Dark Souls kind of thing, is unlocking those shortcuts.
Yeah. And so I've gone through 2 of the planets, I think, so far. I've gone through the first planet and got most of the stuff. And I've gone through maybe 1/2 to 2/3 of the second planet.
You're probably about where I'm at. You're on Zepho. Like, have you gotten to the Eye of the Storm yet? Yeah, you're about where I'm at.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm having a good time with the game. There's not – the upgrading system's, like, fine enough.
This is a basic tech tree kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like get a little bit more health, get a little bit more force, learn a new move that you're not going to use, sort of thing.
Or it's very specialized.
Yeah, I don't... Man, some upgrade systems like that, it's like... Those just aren't for me, I guess. Like, where it's like, oh, this is similar to like God of War upgrades, where it's like, oh, now I can mash these two buttons and I do this move. Like, that sounds sweet. It's like, I have no idea. Like, I have no incentive to do that because I don't know if it's a good or bad thing.
Square, square, square really works for me, actually.
Yeah. Oh.
Never play Neo.
There are some cool upgrades to the lightsaber that I do like that are beyond... cosmetic or whatever.
Yeah, I tried making a couple runs into Dathomir, the kind of like desert planet you can go to get that, and I got rebuked. I got frustrated going for it. So
I haven't gone to that planet yet. I think because that's another thing too. The loading screens in this game are beautiful. Yep. It's
and they better be, because if you're playing on PlayStation 4, you're going to be looking at them a lot.
Ouch.
Yeah, loading times are not good.
So, yeah, the way they do loading, like, it's completely seamless. Like, if you want to travel from one planet to another, you get on this main ship that you have, you go to the comm, you pick a planet that you want to go to, and what the loading screen essentially is, there's an animation plate of your ship taking off, leaving the solar system, kind of similar to No Man's Sky.
Yeah, it goes into hyperspace,
Yeah, exactly. And then you sit down when the planet has been loaded, essentially, and then you land on the planet.
Yeah, I guess when I'm talking about the loading screens being long, it's after death, which is a point of friction. Yeah,
I have noticed that a little bit, but that's usually fine because I'm usually like anxious if I've gotten to that point. So I need like a good 10 to 15 second de-stressor. So I think the only part that's not as much for me in this game is the Dark Soul elements of it. Like, you will just randomly walk into a room and have to fight this giant animal, and you're like, oh, I don't want to do this right now.
Yeah.
I want to, like, kind of progress in the story, and that stuff's fun, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the only part that doesn't speak to me as much, but I still think I'm still really impressed by the game. And this is an EA game, too, which is the other thing that's, like, I can't really wrap my mind around, where it's like, this seems like a well-fleshed-out game. It doesn't seem like a money grab. It seems like they cared about what they were doing when they made it.
I mean, Respawn knows what they're doing.
Oh, shit. I forgot. This is a Respawn game?
Respawn game, and they have I don't think it was straight up written by Chris Avellone, but I think that Chris Avellone consults on the scripting and stuff.
All right, this makes a lot more sense then. Yeah. So, all right, Now I understand now. It just happened to be published by EA. All right, this makes sense.
I mean, it was published by EA insofar as, like, EA owns the Star Wars IP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Respawn now, too, right?
Yes. But, I think EA has always owned Respawn.
I didn't know that. Well, weren't they their own thing when they first started, right?
I don't know.
They were formed by Infinity War.
Nothing is its own thing.
Respawn was acquired by Electronic Arts on December 1st, 2017. So 3 hours after. 3 hours. Like 3 years after they founded. Yeah. Oh, wait. Respawn was founded in 2010. Good God.
They were founded by the people who left Infinity War.
Yeah.
I guess I thought they were acquired.
I didn't realize that they were founded so far before they made the first Titanfall.
I think in the annals of all of our game coverage, we've probably talked about the story of where people leaving Infinity War and then possibly forming Respawn.
We absolutely have.
I just don't understand how they keep making that same mistake over and over again.
What's that?
Falling in with bad publishers.
Or with any publishers.
No, you know. I mean, they make big budget games and publishers give budgets.
Yeah. But if you want to make games with a soul.
Well, you know. This is close. I mean, like, I don't know. But between, like, Titanfall 2 and this, you know, I've not really played Apex Legends. I understand, like, they kind of hit on that and it was good for them. Almost, like, accidentally. But, like, yeah, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order and Titanfall 2, like, they've got a good sense of this stuff.
Yeah, and I kind of went about this all wrong because I was assuming that the team that made Battlefront made this, since that's EA and Star Wars as well.
No, that was Pandemic. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait.
Was it Pandemic?
Can't be Pandemic.
No, Pandemic shut down like a decade ago.
They made the original Battlefront, so that part's true.
The good one.
EA Dice. Yeah, it was Dice. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay, so it's good to know that those two things are completely separate from one another. I thought maybe it was like they had taken what they had learned from Battlefront to add to this game, but that's not the case.
No. DICE is another formerly good studio that sold their soul to a corp, right?
Yeah.
Ouch.
No, that's tough, you know.
Also, clouds like are on the podcast conversation.
But I mean, you know, good people found studios and make the games, then they leave, and the studio keeps the name after those good people are gone.
Yeah.
It's like video game gentrification.
Yeah, maybe. Just flight. People move on. Studios stay longer than they ought to. Hi, BioWare.
Anyway. Back to the game. Recommend the game. I think it's good. Yeah. I'm excited to keep playing it.
This is really all that I've been playing too. The only like additional thing that I have is like I've gotten used to the like world navigation and stuff. man, like wall running and doing all the acrobatics in this is refreshing.
It's pretty good.
You know, just like the stodgy, you know, grounded pace of Dark Souls or anything in that line, you know, even, you know, so far as like Sekiro, right? Like you're doing like zipline stuff and that, but you know, when you're fighting, you're pretty much pinned to the ground. Adding that Uncharted navigation kind of stuff and like wall running, speaking of Titanfall 2, does bring like a really fun lightness to this. In addition to like fantastic sound design, gives everything a good amount of like heft. Mm-hmm. Like the lightsaber combat in this, like the kinesthetics that they do with it, make it the only lightsaber combat that actually feels like it has any weight ever in video games or media.
Wait, how so? What do you mean?
I mean like there's impact when you hit stuff, and like the sound design really sells the impacts of the bolts and things like that, whereas like in the movies it's pretty much just lots of quick movement and whoa. I can do more of that if it didn't get through. no, but they so managed to make everything feel good.
Can you play as a non-Jedi in this? Because that's my biggest pet peeve with Star Wars. I don't care about the Jedi.
You're playing as like a particular character. He's like a late teens Jedi in hiding who sets about trying. His name is Cal. And he there's an actual story. There's no character creation or anything. Like he is setting about trying to gather up the remnants of the Jedi Order,
which I think I am for that. And I'm fine with character creation in some games. But I don't want all games to be like that. Like games that have defined stories. You know.
Yeah. It works here for sure.
Yeah.
It's a good game. I like it.
I can't emphasize enough that the game looks really, really beautiful. Like, that's something I was very surprised by.
It's kind of hard to accept that we are in, like, the last days of the PlayStation 4 generation.
Okay, I thought you were just going to stop there.
No, I mean, I could, and nobody could argue with me. No, but, like, you know, we're in the last, you know, year or two of this being the current gen system, right? And you look at this and you say this feels appreciably prettier and more sophisticated than stuff that happened at the beginning, you know, compare like The Last of Us to PlayStation 3 launch titles, right? I think we're about as far into this generation as The Last of Us was into that one. And it's real cool to see, you know, to see them mastering the hardware and stuff and getting as much juice out of it as they can, even with the bad loading screens.
I think one thing I've been more conscientious of is like how not great consoles are. This is only like PC Master Race stuff, but how like not great the specs on consoles are compared to PCs, or like where it's like the PlayStation 4 doesn't even have a solid state drive, I don't think.
Not by default. Like,
yeah.
No.
And it's just. Yeah.
Yeah, you can put one in. I think no, like even the PlayStation 4 Pro doesn't come with an SSD.
Yeah. So anytime I see a game like this, it just makes me feel really bad for the developers, because I'm like, I don't know how many cartwheels you had to go through to make this work on this
right,
console.
Right, right. You know, to make it run on, like, the equivalent of, like, a super nice PC you could have built in 2012.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Side note, this is completely off the rails on, like, PC Master Race stuff. Have any of you played Road Redemption? That's like the Road Rash remake, you know. Biker, yeah. So they released a new character that is, I think, literally called like PC Master Race, and you know, each of the characters have their perks, and his perk is literally he gets a damage multiplier based on your FPS.
Oh, gee, that's funny. I really wish they didn't name it PC Master Race. Like, I understand that was a cool joke in that video from a while back. I'm just being a wet blanket here. But
it's also it's a subreddit.
Yeah, it's
I don't know what the video is you're mentioning, but it might have life beyond that.
No, I'm referring to like a Yahtzee. Like it was a joke in a Yahtzee video, like a zero punctuation thing that people kind of carried forward. I don't know. I'm not going to throw a wet blanket on you guys saying it because whatever, but
a possibly offensive term.
I don't know. I don't feel great invoking anything about Nazis.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm not coming down on you guys for it. But yeah, that is a very funny idea for a character. Also very unbalanced, and I really enjoy when something comes out that is as unbalanced as that.
Yep.
Yep. Unbalance your shit to make it fun, guys.
It worked for Warframe.
Did you have anything else, Ben?
That's all I got.
Cool.
How much more can you expect of me? I brought two new games to the table.
You brought some good stuff. So you pretty much covered mine. Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order is the only real new thing that I've played. I finished up this past Friday. I finished up The Walking Dead Season 2. It's real good, you guys.
Ooh.
I think that...
It gets better. I
was generally pretty positive about it on like a you know on my revisit, you know. Mm-hmm. And hitting it here this time, like, I think the choice that you have to make at the end of season two, like the series of choices you end up having to make, is more affecting and more effective than the choice at the end of season one. In fact, I think there are a lot of ways that season two is better than season one, guys.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That is a controversial statement, maybe.
It's good. I like it. I like The Walking Dead season two, and I feel goofy for not giving it enough of a chance. But I think that it lived in the shadow of season one so much that it could not have possibly succeeded with those high expectations.
Yeah, I did not play season two because it felt so good about season one that I did not think that they could match that quality. So yeah. This makes me want to possibly try it out then.
It's very good. I have enjoyed it quite a bit. And, you know, I don't know if I'm going to stream season three and four, but I want to play them.
How many of these games have they made?
I had no idea. Okay. So I thought it was just season one, season two, and then they waited forever, made season three. No, season three wasn't called season three. It's called Walking Dead New Frontier, but it's the continuation of Clem's story. And then season four is the final season. Okay. It's just called the final season.
Now they have like Saints and Sinners or some such.
Boof. That is the video game. That's the VR game based on the TV show. This is I'm talking about the Telltale series of like cinematic adventure games.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they got four seasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fourth one came out in 2018. So they're probably done. And since it's called the final season, they're probably done. Yeah.
Like Telltale went bankrupt and closed down like in the middle of the season. And I think Robert Kirkman, the guy who made The Walking Dead, like, came forward with his studios on money to like finish it. So
yeah,
it's even more evidence that they're probably not going to make another one.
Probably not.
But I'm mean, maybe like the characters in the game, maybe the game company will come back from the dead then create a meta season of it.
Yeah. So that's all I've got. Star Wars and Walking Dead. It's a regular Comic-Con up in here.
How would you feel if they came back from the dead? I'm still pitching this idea.
Okay.
They came back from the dead. They make a Walking Dead season where your perspective is you're a zombie and you have to make tough choices about which human you want to eat.
Like for maximum sustenance or for maximum chaos? Or are you trying to choose between the two?
That's what you have to choose between. You got
the hard choices. Do it like I Am Legend style. Mm. You found the zombie society. Yeah. Spoiler.
I mean, it's a really old book and story.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer where we ask you a question and then you answer it. We demand it. I was the one who asked the question on Facebook of the nice people here, so I will read it. Take care. This week's question is about virtual pets, monsters, and animals. What game's virtual pet made you care about its well-being? This can be a game about raising a pet, a mini game, or even a keychain toy like the Tamagotchi. Yeah, and I'll get us started here with Greg, who says, I want to care about things like virtual pets and animals and mini games, but I tend to always forget about them and then feel guilty that they die, even in a virtual death. So I just never even bother. I don't need that guilt in my life. You monster. No, I don't mean that. Come back. Oh, yeah, it's a strategy. It's better than getting the goldfish in Mass Effect and forgetting it, and then, oh, it's dead.
Is that actually a thing?
Yeah, Mass Effect 2, you can get a goldfish for your captain's quarters, and you have to feed it, or else it goes croak.
Yeah, because we can, you know, literally violate the laws of physics, but we can't create a robot that'll just feed your fish.
Hey, fish gotta eat. Man, it's weird. I've got a robot that feeds my cat. Huh. Let's see here. David, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, the earliest game animal I cared about was Yoshi. I did my best to keep him through all the levels you could have him in Mario World.
Except for the one where you have to sacrifice Yoshi to get to the exit.
Yeah, I always felt like it somewhat bothers me when I see the Mario Maker levels that just all built around that.
Yep. Oh, man. This machine kills Yoshis. And then Lindsay also shares a delightful gif of dancing Yoshis from, I believe, the Paper Mario series. God, that was a good looking game. Ben, what does Christopher say?
Chris says, I couldn't even tell you how many times I reloaded the game to keep dog meat from being killed in Fallout and Fallout 2.
Yep. Fallout 3 is mysteriously missing, Chris.
Is he in Fallout 3?
Yep. I know he's a recruitable companion you can get in Fallout 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which one was Fallout 3?
DC.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was the first modern one, right?
The one made in 2008, yeah. Okay. The first 3D, first person shooter one.
Where you could slow motion kill people.
Yes.
Yeah. And then in Fallout 4, they realized, oh, we could just make him immortal.
Yeah. Nobody wants to have the dog die. Let's see here. This is coming back around to me. So Allie writes, most recently, the mini pet Pokemon-esque battles in World of Warcraft. If non-combat minis could be affected, mini Aureen in all her variations in Guild Wars 2, that little dragon is my virtual baby.
Aww.
It took me a second. I saw GW2 and I thought Gears of War 2. And then when I realized it was Guild Wars, I didn't want Jala to hit me.
I mean, in Gears of War, at least 5, you can get the little robot friend. So.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think one of my favorite things about the Pokemon stuff from World of Warcraft is that was an idea pretty late into development. So by that point, there were a whole bunch of characters that you could get as like mini quote unquote pets that just didn't make sense.
You
with
could
that.
Get like Diablo and StarCraft stuff.
Oh
right?
No, so those weren't too bad. That makes sense to have them.
Okay, cool. So you can have a Zergling and it's fine.
Well, as opposed to a child.
Oh, ooh!
In your dog fight,
baby
or,
fights.
Or on the other hand, you know, where the matchup for against the Zergling could be a helium balloon.
That's really dumb. No, they added that in what, like Mist of Pandaria? So it was like four or five expansions in, right?
Yeah. I think maybe Wrath of the Lich King was one of those. Yeah.
Really far in. Huh. Let's see, David, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, in Prince of Persia on the PC, there's a little mouse that helps you, sent by the princess. I was always so worried something bad would happen to that little guy.
And you can't trust Jordan Mechner to take care of that. Hey, Jordan, what happened to the dog in Last Express, Jordan? Sorry. Anyway.
It just always bothered me in games, just the whole plot armor thing and a bunch of these things, like the Dark Souls series where, you know, the non-combat NPCs apparently are just wandering around the world with no consequences.
Well, you know. Yeah.
I don't know. Always bothered me.
They don't die unless you kill them or you fail to protect them. You have to be there, though. Yeah.
You have to be there for them to die.
Yes. Wow. In a way, it's cruel.
Guaranteed tragedy, yeah.
Well... Or on some of them, they you have to be there for them to die, or until the game just decides it's time to twist the knife on you.
Yes, and then you arrive as their kid is sobbing over their body. You know, it happens. It's fine.
Rookie says,
"Hey Ben, what's Rookie say?"
My cow. I don't know if that's how it's pronounced.
Chow. I always thought that was dumb. I thought it should be KO. But yes, my chow.
My chow and Sonic Adventure 2 is probably old enough to drink by now, but he'll always be my baby. Just check the release date. He's 19, but he probably has a fake ID since he's dark type, the little scamp.
Yeah, I raised shitloads of chows on my Dreamcast. It was fun because you could move them to your VMU, the little memory card that had the screen on it, and make it like an actual virtual pet.
Yeah, uh-huh. those were just awesome. Like that was just all the way around an amazing idea.
Yeah, it was really good. Like for me, like I was in the pocket for it. You know, I would just keep that like on my stand in band class, watching it as it went on its little journey.
Yep.
Yeah. Chow might be my answer for this, but I'll come up with something later. let's see. Steven writes, Monster Rancher, feeding them on the ranch. Taking them into battle and exploring ruins made me feel like they were my best buds. Well, yeah, and also each monster is your favorite song by your favorite band.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, if you're playing early enough ones, then you know, when you spawn them by putting in music.
Hmm.
Yeah. I have nothing to add on top of that. Hey, David, what's Casey say?
He says, I spent hundreds of hours in my tween years farming Neopoints for my, let's see how many of these I can still pronounce. Shoru, Zafara, and Loop?
I always said Loop.
Neopets, feeding them something besides free omelets, soup, or jello. Getting them the coolest paintbrushes, by which, of course, he means striped, because that was the best paintbrush.
Oh, Rainbow Man, come on.
And even sending them to luxury hotels to be taken care of while I was going to be away from the internet.
Yeah, man, Neopets was the thing. Rushing home from school every day to like refresh the page for when the shop respawned, so maybe you could buy one of those eggs that had mystery stuff inside.
Yep.
Yeah. Good stuff. Wish I still had my login, but also like if you go and you know there's a down the rabbit hole video that describes like exactly all the stuff that has gone wrong with Neopets and basically just what a mess it is. Maybe it's good that I don't still have that login.
Yeah, that's maybe number one for me for my, like, you can never go home game.
Yes. They took home away. And Ben, Dulce, finishes that out with more Neopets. What's Dulce say?
Dulce says, Neopets. I remember being very young and setting up an account because I needed a way to convince my dad to let me go online. He hates the internet. So I would tell him that I needed to feed the pets or else they would die. I really got invested in the game, though. Collecting new points and buying brushes for my pets was awesome. The account still lingers with a lot of brushes, a Neopet color that is super rare and random to get, a huge shop, and a couple of limited/restricted Neopets. Drake and Poogle?
That might have been after my time.
I don't know what Neopets is.
Oh, wow. It was like a web browser pet game kind of thing that was actually just a way to market to kids. like they put in, you know, like
tight.
Yeah, they put in, you know, just in-game branding stuff. It was super super sketchy. All told,
the game has like a tutorial for how to convince your parents to get their credit card or something.
to be fair, like in its defense, mm-hmm. It didn't start out that way, and it was probably one of the forefronts of like, oh no, how do we actually make money off the interweb?
Yeah, how do we make money off of a bunch of kids that we have playing our game?
Yeah, but it did end up going very sketch.
Yeah, I mean, a short version of the story is that the initial team, like it was like a husband and wife or something like that, who started out like one did a little bit of web development, one did a little bit of art. They hooked up with like a business guy from LA to like turn it into an actual business and promote it. But that guy was a super huge Scientologist who basically ran the company like a Scientology org. And they like the company almost split apart because he was trying to put Scientology teaching into the game.
At first blush, I said, oh, it could be a good or bad thing because he probably has to pay a lot of money to the Scientologists.
So right.
So he has to make a lot of money, too. So.
Right. Yeah. Now you got to feed the monkey somehow. Yeah. For me, because Chow is probably my answer and Neopets would be a second answer. It's weird. It's almost like our audience is a bunch of 30 somethings who were kind of like first getting on the internet in the late 90s and early 2000s. It's weird how that happens, right?
Birds of a feather.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, I have had a handful of like digital pets in my time. In fact, I've got one right here. It is a Tamagotchi based on the Sanrio character Gudetama. It is the egg creature that has depression. So he doesn't die. He just gets cooked into different kinds of eggs based on how he dies. So that's fun.
I was thinking that you'd feed them antidepressants or something.
No. You feed them soy sauce. It's really cute. So it's Sanrio. So it's like the Hello Kitty people. The weirdest one of those that I had, and I still wish that I owned it, was a Star Wars digital pet where you took care of Yoda. Huh.
It was prescient then. It was Baby Yoda before Baby Yoda existed.
Kind of. But, like, you could press a button and you would see on the little LCD, like, you know, do not, there is no try. But, like, you would have to feed him, like those little power bars that that Luke had. You had to clean up his poop. And you have
that's
like,
so weird.
You gotta. I mean, Yoda's wise. He knows not to poop where he lives.
But he's 800 years old. So like, this is more getting into like elderly care than it is like pet care.
Yeah, then it wraps around to being depressing again. And then you did little mini games. So like, it was basically like a little like three card Monty kind of thing. Like you use the force to try and guess which cup had something under it. And also like there was a button mashing thing to raise force lift different stuff. And the most, the most difficult one was to raise the X-Wing out of the swamp.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So it was a thoroughly strange product that mix, like, I had no idea what I was doing. Am I training to be a Jedi? Am I trying to make sure Yoda doesn't die?
Yeah, is Yoda okay? Or yeah. What's going on here?
Yeah, if you failed, like, you would come back and he was a Force ghost, so.
Well, I mean, why do you think he died in, what was it, the second movie?
Third? Movie? Yeah, third. So,
I know you said Force ghost, but I heard Horse ghost.
We have no idea what kind of creature he is, so, like, the biology is, I mean, jury's still out. He might, yeah. He might become a horse ghost, then a force ghost. So, that's my answer. I raised a Yoda. David, how about you?
So, in terms of, like, Tamagotchi-type things, I had a Digimon.
Ooh, yeah, love those.
So, yeah, that was kind of my thing. Those were a huge fad at our school for a while.
Uh-huh.
And
they were confiscating those things left and right.
Right. And I think, like, I know to a certain degree that those were a thing, like, in general, although I'm not sure to what degree, like, them becoming that big of a deal was kind of local to us.
I don't know. It was definitely a huge thing at our middle school. I have talked to other people who remember them, and, like, apparently those things are really rare and you can get some good money for them. I don't know if that implies that, like, they are beloved, or if that implies that they didn't make enough of them. And so, like, people who found out about Digimon through the anime, like, this predated the anime in America by a good amount of time. Right. So I don't know if it was a thing for other people.
Yeah, I do not know. Other than that, I feel like the easy one for this would have to go with my Palico and, you know, Monster Hunter.
That's a good one. Feed him delicious food.
He is a better person than I am.
By virtue of being a cat man?
Oh, by virtue of being much braver than my character is.
Yes. I understand. Yeah, Palicos. Ben, how about you?
I'm going to spoil Shadow of the Colossus, so if you don't want to listen to that, skip ahead. But Aggro, I think, was the closest I ever came to a virtual pet. Yeah. At the end of the game, when he falls off of a bridge, I genuinely felt sadness. And
but he doesn't die. Yeah.
He limps back later. Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
yeah. if Wander was a humane man, he would put the horse down.
Yeah, it's good to say. You know what?
He was
you
a
do
demon
to...
baby at that point.
Okay,
so
yeah,
he had very little power over
right,
the situation.
Right. But, so if that princess or his sister or whatever had any sense, she would put him down.
No, he just had a slight limp. I think it was something where the game developers didn't want to go all the way because they felt make like it, how much sadness.
Make it as dark as possible. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're just like, we'll hand wave it and say that he just limps back.
Yeah.
It's after still that
really
thousand foot
me.
Fall. Yeah.
It still really bothers me when games will do the, like, you know, you'll blatantly take out someone on horseback, but the horse is just magically all right. Like, I remember, what is it, like, Assassin's Creed 2, you can, you know, there's a chase where you're blasting a horse with, like, a mini artillery piece, and they'll just kind of, like, get up and run off.
Flanks of steel.
I was gonna say, you probably like Red Dead Redemption then, because they are they just stick close to reality.
More dead horses than demon souls.
I love the fact that you can shoot your own horse in that game, and they're like, yep, we'll allow that. Yeah. Now you're falling off.
Yeah, well, you'd be an idiot to do it, but we're gonna let you.
Uh-huh. Well, I've heard the argument that that was actually the primary reason that that basically cowboys carried revolvers was, you know, if you fall off your horse and, like, get caught and are being dragged, mm-hmm. That's the kill switch.
Yeah.
Very grim. I am now sad about dead horses. It's a miracle you made me sad about dead horses.
Whatever. Red Dead Redemption, you kill so many horses, you don't have any feeling about it anymore.
Yeah, you feel nothing.
I do feel a little weird about reading the fact that, at least in the first game, like, sacrificing your horse was by far the like preferred way to complete the achievement for hunting a bear.
Wait, what's that achievement?
Well, it's just like they had the hunting challenges, and the final one was like, I think actually it was like killing two bears, you know, within a short period of time. But I never got to that point. But I guess the bears were like, could nearly one shot you.
Yeah, they're bears.
So just about the only way to do it was to just sacrifice your horse.
Oh yeah, use it as bait. Yeah.
Oof.
Thank you everybody for writing in. Sorry we talked about killing so many horses.
Yeah.
I think
you can blame Rockstar on this
motorcycle.
Horse is a motorcycle, but with oats instead of gasoline. So if you would like to participate in these, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
I believe the technical term is an oater cycle.
Jesus Christ, David. I dropped him, Ben. Let's add him back on. He'll laugh. Let's see here. Sorry,
you knew what you did.
You kind of turned staticky there for a second.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that it's exciting to us. I'm going to do one here real quick because a game that I really enjoy that I've talked about in the past called House Flipper is coming to consoles this month. Not the Switch, unfortunately. This would be an amazing game on Switch. But yeah, they're bringing the 2018 game House Flipper, which is a sim game where you either take on jobs to do like renovations, or you buy a derelict property and refinish it to sell it. And it is all done in first person with really awkward controls and stuff. Going to be on consoles now, which means that more people can play this really weird and relaxing game. I have no idea if they're going to include the Garden Flipper or Apocalypse Flipper. I have no idea. I've not played the Apocalypse Flipper one. The Garden Flipper one's cool. Like you're doing like landscaping and stuff.
Oh man.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard of these DLCs. I'm going to look these up.
And apparently they're like working on one that is like HGTV branded. I have no idea what that's going to add. And also I've been waiting for this. They're going to be putting out a VR update for it. So you can do House Flipper in VR, which means that the joke from The Simpsons, where you can neglect your yard work by going into the yard work simulator, is entirely possible.
It is
within our grasp. So...
I would love if they made one of these that actually taught you to a certain degree how to do some of this stuff.
It shows you some stuff step by step. It runs you step by step through like how to install a sink and stuff.
But, oh, that's pretty good.
But other stuff happens like magically.
Yeah. Press B to put up drywall.
Yes. Yeah. Man.
I effing hate drywall.
Yeah, drywall's a pain. Not
struck a nerve.
No, drywall just sucks.
Well, no, it's just like I don't know. I would argue it's just emblematic of like throwaway culture of like, rather than, you know, make a building that'll last, you know, hundreds of years, we can make a cheap building that'll, you know, last until you get the smallest amount of water on it.
No, yeah, but it's also easy to replace and take down and stuff. I'm not here to advocate for drywall.
I don't have a drywall opinion.
Yeah, I said I was complaining about drywall because it's a pain to hang. But
yeah,
drywall, sheetrock, any of those. Man, wood paneling needs to come back. I miss wood paneling.
You got a house, man. You can do it.
I can be the change I want to see in the world.
Yeah.
Ben, what's going on with that goose game?
Yeah, so this is kind of a happy news story. Untitled Goose Game got a Game of the Year for DICE Awards. One aspect I really liked of the story is they added a link, they tweeted out a picture that said, well, this is weird, that had like a Wikipedia article of all the awards that DICE has given over the past like 25 years or so.
Yeah.
And It's a pretty monumental list, starting with GoldenEye in 97 and going up to God of War last year.
Yeah.
There's a lot of heavy hitters on it.
And uh-huh, and Goose Game gets there.
Yeah, I don't think this is an incorrect decision. I think, I think Untitled Goose Game is probably the game that I had the most fun with in the past year.
That's cool.
Like, that said, like, I'm playing Star Wars right now, and, like, I mean, that's definitely a bigger and more, more, it has much more spectacle than Untitled Goose Game does, for sure.
Yeah.
But I still don't think this is necessarily a wrong decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It definitely made a splash. Like, it really was a game that a lot of people loved. I'm also happy, like, I mean, this is a story that happened a couple of weeks ago, and it was just, there was other stuff that happened, I guess, but, like, that studio, so House, like, they donate a certain amount of their proceeds to, like, indigenous rights organizations, because they're an Australian company. So, like, I think point we talked about how they put in a message in their credits, but yeah, they're like putting their money where their mouth is, and it's cool to see a small ethical developer, get recognition. To see them get some success. So yeah, it's good. I like an underdog story.
Yeah, and it's interesting too. It kind of raises the question. It feels like there should be two awards at the end of the year, where it's like, what's the best game, period, and what's the best game in terms of the scale of the company? You know what I mean? Because it feels like those are two different awards.
Yeah. But then you get into, like what qualifies as indie? Because, like, I don't know. Look at 2012. Journey came out, and, like, yeah, that was published by Sony, but that game company isn't necessarily that huge. Journey an indie game?
I'm not trying to draw the line at indie versus non-indie. I'm just trying to say, like,
oh, like the scale of resources. Period. Yeah.
Yeah. Best game per developers that they have, type thing.
Yeah.
Cause so last year God of War won for Dice Awards, but if we were doing it by scale of the company, I think Subnautica has a real shot at being the better game of the year.
Frostpunk, man. Come on.
Oh, how did God of War win?
That was a game a lot of people liked.
It's a good game.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's not a good game, but I feel like compared to, in particular, Subnautica and Frostpunk, I feel like those were pretty, I think those pretty handily better games.
Yeah, yeah. But is it like...
They're very different and very hard to compare, I think, between God of War and Subnautica.
Yeah, it's apples and oranges, but also it's mass market versus relatively niche, you know? Like, everything that I see here on the Dice list, you know, this is not a value judgment, is pretty mass market, you know?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I'd be cool with you making that value judgment, but...
Well, you know, mass market stuff can be fun, and niche stuff can be fun. It's, like, not necessarily a line that you draw where the good stuff is always and only on one side.
Yeah, looking at the list, there's only a few kind of, like, so-so ones. The one I'm looking at is 2014 Dragon Age Inquisition. It's like, man, a better game didn't come out that year.
That's like a real Son of a Woman kind of thing, where they they didn't give BioWare, like, they didn't give Dragon Age 2 the award like they should have. I will die on that hill, you heathens.
What year did it come out, though?
That came out in 2011. Against Skyrim, so
okay,
yeah, no, it's like a lifetime achievement award giving it to Dragon Age Inquisition when Skyrim didn't win. Yeah,
oh, that's such a shitty game.
That was, but it was huge. It was huge at the time. Like, again, this is,
doesn't make it a good game.
Yeah,
it's. I mean, it's not my favorite game, but I don't think it's a bad pick for game of the year.
It's hard, you know, for a lot of these, it is hard not to call the winner important.
Yeah,
you know, at least in terms of, like, yeah, it's just weird. Like, you get into any kind of award like this, huh? I need to move.
Yeah, I would say it is definitely, Skyrim is important in a very similar way to McDonald's is important.
Yeah,
I guess the only objection I have over it is Witness should have got over Overwatch in 2016, but that is my hill that I'll die on.
Yeah,
that's a tough one. Yeah, no, because.
It's tough. Like, every year is a good year for games. Yeah. David, what's going on with The Division?
So this is a real short one, which is just the Division is releasing a Division 2 specifically is releasing an expansion where they're back to New York, and it's going to be a FIDI district, which means potentially I'll be able to find my apartment.
Ooh, FIDI, so finance and what?
Financial district.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, so it's like ATM machine, FIDI, financial district.
Yep.
Financial district.
Yep.
Yes.
So, yeah, that'll be interesting because, like, there's actually, like, the southern, downtown Manhattan is, like, financial district. That's Chinatown, Little Italy, Brooklyn Bridge. Like, there's, 9/11 memorial. There's a ton of interesting areas I could see them doing stuff with. So I think that could actually be a pretty fun setting.
I would be really curious if they do anything in that setting with the Freedom Tower. That seems like it would not go over well.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Also, I'm interested to see how games handle it overall, just because I don't know. I guess maybe it's just with the fact that, like, arguably 9/11 was the defining moment of our generation.
Yep.
And consequently, a lot of media like that around there shortly before is where, like, the timeline diverges.
Yes.
And so there's a bunch of games where it's even games that, like, it's not explicit that it doesn't, it didn't happen. It's ambiguous, like, what, how that should be.
Yeah.
Like, pretty much anything other than Deus Ex.
Which it was just an accident, but they rolled with it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So Dead Horses, 9/11. Sorry, yeah. I'm just listing up the bummers.
So you're saying Rockstar needs to make a 9/11 game.
You said it, not me. but they're doing gameplay overhauls, not just putting in the financial district. Is there like a headline feature they're putting in?
Honestly, I think the headline feature is that the plot line from the Division 1 ends on a cliffhanger.
Okay.
And then the Division 2 has nothing to do with that cliffhanger.
Huh.
And so they're now finally going back
to DC. DC, New York, sorry.
Yeah, so you're finally going after, like, the Rogue Division agent. Gotcha. Kind of a thing. I think it's going to be I'm a little bit concerned about it because, like, the character is very much is it the Jackal in Far Cry 2?
I think.
But, very, very similar to, yes. you played Far Cry 2, right?
Yeah, it's the Jackal. It's the quote-unquote bad guy in the game.
Right.
Yeah. Very, very similar characterization in terms of, like, random dude who, like, quotes Nietzsche at you and stuff.
It's a Colonel Kurtz kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a thing where, like, I think it's going to be really tough to not have, like, you can have a character that's that sort of badass as long as they don't ever actually do anything.
Right.
But I feel like that's a really tough thing to live up to without coming across as, like, freshman, philosophy major man.
Yeah. You laughed when I said Colonel Kurtz, Ben. Was that the wrong thing?
No, I was just trying to think of which reference more listeners would understand.
Oh, the
Park Cry 2. I think it's neck and neck.
We can just go with Spec Ops the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Gotcha.
As a side note, if you ever want to see a game that gets really depressing, start collecting the audio logs in Division 2.
I mean, it's like like near present post apocalyptic America, right?
Basically viral outbreak.
I'm gonna move us on from that because that gets too close to like actual worries of mine.
Did a real tour de force this weekend.
Yeah. Ooh, Ray of Sunshine.
So this is like the downer group of the combination of hosts, I guess.
Oh, it's fine. I'm having fun. We can laugh while being down.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, David shared a really fun picture of a dog just completely crashed out on a couch from his work. That's good.
Oh, dude.
It's really good. Yeah. It looks like he landed like after like flying through, like, being tossed through the window by a Marvel supervillain.
Yeah, it's his owner who's like snapping the picture. He just looks over and says, "Sister's dog, you're doing this to yourself, you know."
What's the dog to human ratio at your work, Dave?
There's about 40-ish employees there, and there will often be like 5 to 6 dogs.
Okay, that's pretty good. Like that's pretty good
ratio.
Nearly 1 to 10, something like that. Yeah.
So you don't want the dogs to start outnumbering the people because then they start making plans.
And dogs unfortunately are not known for their good business sense.
No, they're gonna let's buy a pool table. That was dumb. That sounds like an episode to me. How do you guys feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level. We really appreciate you taking the time. You know the stuff you can do for the show, ratings and reviews, Patreon, those kinds of things. If you want to be entertained this weekend, something to distract you from the Nevada caucuses, you can watch our streams, me on Saturday and Gary and Nick on Sunday, raising money for the campaign for Bernie Sanders. That'll be fun. Go to duckfeed.tv/Bernie or just the Duckfeed Twitch channel. Hang out. It'll be a good time. We're not going to pressure you to donate like we'd prefer you did, but you know, it's not prerequisite. You're welcome. Everybody's welcome to the tent.
By this weekend, we mean the 22nd of February, which is tomorrow or today, depending upon when you're listening to this, or way in the past.
Yes, the 22nd and the 23rd. Thank you for clarifying, Ben. Is there anything I'm forgetting? Is there anything that either of you want to promote?
No.
Okay.
Just be good to each other.
Yes, be good neighbors. Please. So you can watch my streams on Twitch at Duckfeed TV. I've been Cole Ross.
I continue to be David.
I am Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, who has titles?
I have two.
Okay.
I have Cincinnatus : with Extreme Prejudice. And I have This Machine Kills Yoshis.
I also have This Machine Kills Yoshis. Ben, what you got?
I have two. They both have exclamation points. One of them is, they're bears! The other one is, Lazarus!
What's that from?
It's the dude who is yelling at David's meetup.
Oh, shit, yeah. That's really good. I have something you said, Ben. Colon's all over the place when talking about the Star Wars game.
I like that out of context.
Yes, out of context is very good. Then I also have This Machine Kills Yoshis. Is there any reason why we should not go with the votes for This Machine Kills Yoshis?
Nope.
Ben?
Nope.
Okie doke.
So completely randomly, did you ever see that Guthrie actually wrote a anti-Trump song?
Woody Guthrie? Or
yep.
Wait, what?
He was staying in, he lived in one of Trump Sr.'s apartment buildings.
Really?
And this was when Trump Sr. was really, really big into, what is it called, like redlining?
Yeah, no, he was doing shitty real estate stuff in Queens at that time.
Right.
Yeah.
And so basically Guthrie wrote a song basically protest him. I think there are some like recordings maybe of him singing it, but like it's never published, but there is definitely songs of that.
I Ain't Got No Home / Old Man Trump there we go. I Ain't Got No Home / Old Man Trump. Huh.
Yep.
Man, just like I need to find a good biography of Woody Guthrie because I really admire that man.
Yeah, he's a really interesting, just really interesting guy. And just, I kind of like the fact that, like, the whole this machine kills Nazis, like...
Kills fascists.
Or was it fascists? I like the fact that that's become, like, the, you know, big slogan for like across the board, you know, punk movement stuff like that.
He did it out of patriotism.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and just in general, like, I mean, I feel like if, you know, different time period, he probably would have been pretty cool with the punk movement.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Like, he was still kind of a dorky folk singer. You know?
Oh, he was a super dorky folk singer who like specifically saw fascism as anti-American. And I'm dorky. I like folk music, and I think fascism is anti-American.
Yeah, yeah. No, I love that, like, that, I don't know, like, intergenerational whatever.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Hey, you know, so. It's about the content, not the style.
Exactly.
Yeah. Cool, guys. Hope you guys have a good week. I've got to go and sleep, because I've got a dentist appointment. What's up, Ben?
Question on Saturday, how long are you streaming during the day? You said it's still TBD.
Still TBD. I'm probably gonna do like a good chunk, like probably starting around noon my time. If you wanna hop on and do like we did last time with Discord, yeah. I'd be super happy to have you on. Or if there's like a if you wanna work out a time to hop on and do some streaming for it, well, you know, I can set you to host and all that. You can be part of the festivities if you want.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you want to just like send me a message on like Thursday or Friday? I should be free. I don't have any plans yet this weekend, so.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Cool.
All right, sweet.
All right, later, you guys.
Peace, y'all.
Night.
Bye.